I'm Brittany Ross, and I play the fiddle.
I'm Catherine Blinchem, and I play the pipe.
And together, we are Fiddle and Pipe.
Two classical musicians who are reading and discussing topics beyond the staff.
So grab a book, take a seat, and tune in. So apparently, I got literally 5.5 hours of sleep last night.
Oh, that doesn't sound great.
I woke up a bunch. Yeah, you can hear it in my voice. I woke up a bunch between like snake. Like 7:47 and 8. And I think that's when I was kicking David in the back to take care of the animals.
Oh, and he didn't.
No, he did.
Oh, he did.
He was just like, what are you doing? And I was just like, bitch, get up.
I am not taking care of the animals because I did last night.
Yeah, I was just like, you dumped them on me. And honestly, like, doing it at night is, like, harder because, like, yeah. That's when we, like, do the litter and they get more medication at night. And then they all need their treats. And Vivi's fussy and he needs his, like, cat yogurt treats. So, like, we have to, like, squeeze it into a little bowl. And then we have to guard him because he's such a gentle boy. He'll let the other cats steal his cat yogurt. And he eats it so slow. I can't be mad at him because he's orange. And then Valkyrie needs to be brushed. So yeah, like the night animals are like a whole
routine. It's like you
routine.
Guys have a whole family routine. It's so cute.
We do. I hate it.
This is why I have one cat.
What is your routine with your one cat?
Oh, you want to know?
Yes.
So I wake up. It's just me that wakes up.
What, he doesn't wake up?
No, because he's...
Oh yeah, he sleeps in because he goes to bed later.
He's the night man.
Mm-hmm.
I...
Nightman!
But Lacey will see me get up, and she does not hesitate. I will be peeing, and she will run up to me meowing for her greenies. Like, that's what she wants.
Her greenies?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm like, why is she, like, meowing for that in the morning? Does she get morning treats?
Yeah, I give her 2 greenies every morning.
Interesting. We do, like, bedtime treats.
Yeah. Well, for bedtime, we usually give her, like a hairball treat that we have, like, the little, like, the paste in the stick thing.
Yeah, that's the cat yogurts.
Yeah. Is that cat?
They're, like, we call them cat yogurts because they look like go-gurt tubes.
I was, like, imagining actual yogurt that you were giving.
You're just like, what's happening?
So I guess, yeah, cat yogurts. We give her, like, a hairball yogurt or sometimes, like, we have these nip sticks that we get from King Soopers and we cut them into, like, thirds or fourths. And I give her, like, a little one for at night. But in the morning, she gets her greenies, so.
Yeah, I mean, like, the way that our cats do it is, like, Vivi is a good boy and he will never do anything. Like, he patiently waits.
He's so perfect.
Like, out there, I guess this is an audio medium, but, like, he waits out by, like, the washer and dryer where we keep all their food and stuff. Mm-hmm. But Bartok and Figaro tag team us. So Bartok will run across our bed. He will jump up onto, like, the dresser and the bookcase, and he will launch himself from those onto our bed and onto us. Figaro screams at us, and he likes to... We have, like, 2 nightstands on both sides of our bed, so he likes to walk from one nightstand onto the headboard and onto the other nightstand, and he will proceed to do that back and forth while meowing. So that's usually how I wake up in the mornings. And then if I get Valkyrie riled up, because she's part husky, she'll start yelling, too. So, yeah. We have to be, like, really cautious of when we set our alarms, because... If they hear the alarms and then they notice us stirring, like, they'll get excited. Like, when David gets up before me, it's rare these days, I feel like. But whenever he gets up before me, he says he can always tell when I'm getting up because Figaro gets all excited. He starts doing this thing that we call quiver tail, where it's like some cats, if they get really excited, they just start shaking their tail.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So, like, he shakes his tail and he gets all, like, prancy. And then he, like, tries to lead David to the bedroom to, like, tell him that I'm waking up.
That's so
And
cute.
Then he yells at me. The Figaro yells at me, not David.
David yells at you.
Yeah. Welcome to yet another episode of your favorite podcast, Fiddle and Pipe. I'm Brittany. Your girl is almost 31 and she cannot party like she used to. I didn't even drink that much. I had 1 gin and tonic and I had like 2 or 3 beers and we got there at like 8:30 and we left at, I think, 2.
Wow.
I'm just tired. I'm just old. Like my... Fair. Body just is breaking down. I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, that's why I went to bed at 10 o'clock last night, because I was like, this is bedtime.
And you were hearing the voice of the lovely Catherine Flinsham, who got 8 hours of sleep last night.
I did. It was great.
Meanwhile, I sound like I'm dying. Slowly. On the inside.
Slowly.
I feel like I have, like, the best voice to do, like, a mock NPR kind of thing right now. Speaking of soothing, we obviously are not recording as frequently as we used to, but we did decide to do a best and worst of 2023.
Yes.
Now that is 2024, which is wild. Time keeps moving forward.
Okay. I don't know if you've been seeing these memes, but for me...
I think it's pronounced Mimi.
Mimi? Is it...
Yeah.
Is it meme or Mimi?
It's Mimi. You didn't know this?
I thought it was a meme.
Mimi.
Anyway, so
I'm fucking with you, by the way. Me. Don't ever go to anyone and say Mimi.
It's too early for this. It is 8:30 here, okay? I have not fully waken up. Awake, but not fully awake. But still, not okay. Not okay. But I am this meme. It's like the guy is like staring out into space, staring forward at the camera, and it says 2020. Then the next like slot is black, mm-hmm. and then the slot under the black slot is like the guy like opens his eyes.
Oh, yeah, the white blonde guy who's just like,
yeah,
surprised. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, that's me. That's how I feel.
All the time.
Because I feel like 2021 went by. Don't remember that much. 2022, same thing. 2023 just felt really short. Now we're here.
2023 felt like our first, like, quote-unquote, real year post-pandemic, I feel like.
Oh, I know, yeah.
I'm still surprised it's not 2019, so.
Stop, that's so long.
I know, can you believe that was...
That's like 5 years
ago. 5 years ago. Okay, so we did a best and worst of 2023. We picked our top three books of the year and worst three, I guess, of the year.
Yeah.
All right, so how do you want to do this? Do you want to go back and forth?
How about we do like, we go back and forth, but like first round is best book, like one of our best books. Mm-hmm. Then the next round is one of our worst books. Then we go back to one of our best books.
Okay.
Then one of our worst.
Okay.
Do you want to do that?
So best book, worst book, and then scaling down from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. You go first.
Okay. This is definitely my favorite read and best read of 2023, Invisible Life of Addie LaRue.
That was a really good book. And I do believe, aren't we going to cover that with Rainer?
Yeah, we're going to definitely cover it in detail, so stay tuned. But this book, I mean, I was so interested in it. It took me a little bit of time to read through because I was reading it during, like, busy time. I liked, what's her name? Who wrote Addie LaRue? I don't have the book. I just ordered the book, but I don't have it.
I'm surprised you don't have your Goodreads open.
I know, I don't. Sorry, I wasn't prepared.
The Secret Life. Damn it.
No, it's not The Secret Life, because we always keep saying it's The Secret Life, and I think it's because of that stupid show, The Secret Life of the American Teenager.
V.E. Schwab.
Okay, yeah, I really like V.E. Schwab's writing. I was completely thrown off about, like, my predictions, and I was okay with it. And, yeah.
Do you want to give, like, a basic premise of what the book is? Like, maybe for people who are listening who maybe haven't read it or maybe are interested in it?
Well, if you are interested in hearing about a girl who goes through time and literally lives her life being invisible, because one moment you'll see her and then once you turn away, you'll never remember her again. This is a story about her where she meets somebody that does see her and remembers her. And it's a very interesting tale of, you know, her background and her current situation.
I thought it was a really interesting book. I've never really read anything quite like it. Like, it was a little reminiscent of How to Stop Time by Matt Haig, because it was sort of he had a similar presence where it was a guy who, like, his lifespan was significantly longer than normal folks. Like, I think he was hundreds of years old. And so I feel like that would be a book that was similar, and he was kind of, like, contemplating his existence and stuff. Because, you know, Matt Haig is very big into, like, the existential and, like, mental health kind of thing. So it was based on that. It was a little reminiscent of that, but I've never really read a book that's like this. Because the reason why she exists, I guess, like, longer or outside of your human perception and longer than a basic human life was not really set up. Like, there was a magical element, like a magical realism element to it that
which I thought was really interesting.
I didn't expect it. It was like it's like a low-key fantasy book.
It is. I mean, I don't know about you, but like every time I'm reading a book like that, I'm always imagining, like, what would it be like if this were a movie? What would it be like if this were a TV show? I'm imagining, like, the people, what they look like, the setting and the scenes, and just, like, I don't know. I feel like if they ever did, like, a limited series of this book or a movie, they could do a really good job with it.
Oh, yeah.
But such a good book. I really loved it. That's why, like, I really want a sequel. Like, are we going to get one? Because I'll be really honest with you, I did not like the ending.
It was definitely, we'll talk about that. Yeah, we'll talk about that later, but it was definitely set up where there could be either a sequel or maybe something in the same universe.
Definitely.
All right. Well, my favorite book of the year is The Last House on Needless Street by Katarina Ward. This book kind of fucked me up. The annoying thing about books like this is, like, you can't really say too much about the book before you give it away. But the basic premise is that this book is about a serial killer, a kid, and a cat. And they all live in the same house. And it's an ordinary house at the end of an ordinary street.
Is the serial killer, like, did they abduct the kid?
I can't say.
Well, that's not fun.
That's the thing, because I really can't give a lot away. This book is definitely, if you like books that have like unreliable narrators and you're kind of always questioning what's going on and what you're reading, this book is definitely for you. None of the twists in this book, I didn't see any of the twists in this book coming.
Hold up. Can you tell me? Wait just a second. I need to actually open up my Goodreads. I'm going to add this to my list because I am just on a true crime binge right now. I'm into murder mysteries and mysteries in general. So,
you would love it.
What's it called?
The Last House on Needless Street.
I was about to say The Last House on the Left.
But there's not that much you can really learn about this book without spoiling it. And that's the thing that really irritated me. But the way that it deals with trauma, I feel like it was done very well, and I can't really say much more on that either, which is really unfortunate, but it kind of gave me a book that I used to talk about all the time is like Tender as the Flesh.
You've mentioned that a few times, yes.
It's also an amazing book. So that book is basically my ignorant white side is showing, but it was originally written in Spanish. I think the author is Brazilian or Argentinian or Venezuelan or something. South American, Central American, and it was basically like a critique on how we as a society are destroying the planet, and there's also like themes of infertility and other kind of heavy topics in it, but it basically did it as an, I'm going to say allegory because that sounds like the right word, but it could be the wrong word, of people who can't eat meat anymore because basically all the meat has been poisoned and they have to like eat people if they want meat.
I think, yeah, this is sounding more familiar the more that you're like describing it because I know that you've done this more than once. It's a dystopian novel, isn't it?
Basically, yeah. They talk about like farming people and then using people as like a source of leather. And then also there's basically like breeding people where you get people for the purpose of like impregnating them. Yeah, it's really fucked up, but it was an amazing book. But this book is The Last House, definitely, I think, my favorite book of the year. Just because, again, you can't really trust what you're reading. That I just didn't see any of the twists coming. It is a horror book, but I would say it's more like thriller. Like, nothing in it was, like, scary. There's not really, like, a monster.
There's, like, moments where you're kind of, like, the suspense is building, and you're just, like,
yeah.
Energy's heightened. I feel that. I've been there.
And I audiobooked it and I couldn't, like, normally how I balance audiobooks is I'll usually listen to like about 2 hours until I get to a stopping point, and then I'll alternate with some podcasts and then I'll go back to my audiobook so that way I'm not missing out on podcasts that are coming out, but I also want to read the audiobook. This one, once I started, I couldn't stop listening to it.
Yeah,
so the story is told from the perspective of a full-grown man, a kid, and a cat.
Do you get narration from the cat?
You get narration from the cat.
Oh boy. Just a side note, I've been seeing some books on the perspectives of cats, and I feel like we should definitely read a book from a perspective of a cat. In honor
I would love
of
that.
Our cats.
In honor of our cats. Yes, I think we should
and
definitely
cats
do
everywhere.
That. Yes.
Anyway, so the worst book for me is Think Again by Adam Grant.
Was it really?
But you know why?
Is it because you thought too much?
No, because literally, like, when I looked at my Goodreads review, I just put, it's okay. And I saw that last night, and I just started laughing. Like, I had no words for it. I don't even remember what it's about. And so that's why I call it the
Thinking.
Worst read. Because I don't remember much from that book. I'm not even going to explain what it's about. You can look it up yourself. Go on Google. Look up Think Again.
Oh, we covered it.
I know, but I don't remember much from it at all. I just put, it's okay, and that's it.
Think Again is a book about the benefit of doubt and about how we can get better at embracing the unknown and the joy of being wrong. The book about mindset and shifting your mindset and rethinking and reprocessing. I remember there was a lot of thinking. Like, we said the word thinking a lot when we were covering this.
I know.
Was this our first book where we got together and we're like, this can be one episode?
Yes. I'm not saying that the content was bad. I'm just saying that, like, for me personally,
it was very dry.
It was dry, but, like, for me personally, like, I don't think I retained much from that book really much at all. Like, I don't, because, like, I honestly can't tell you what I remember from that book at all. And maybe it's also just because, like, at that time also I was, like, crazy busy and I had a lot going on. But at the same time, like, I don't know, I have read other nonfiction books, like, okay, like, The Art of Gathering was really close. But the thing is with The Art of Gathering, I remember things from that book. If I really can't remember it and I can't tell you what it's about, I'm going to call it the worst book.
It's okay.
It's okay. Like, I'm sorry. I just, that's, it happens. I don't know. Sometimes.
I love that review.
I couldn't help myself but be like, yep, this is it. This is the one.
My worst book of the year, I'm going to get some hate for this, I feel like. It's the fourth book in the Court of Thorns and Roses series. It was A Court of Silver Flames.
Is this the one where you said you stopped listening to it?
This is the one where I literally... Okay, spoiler alert. I'm going to read my review for this one because I think I read it on some Patreon episode.
You did.
But if you, I guess, have lived under a rock and you don't know this series, because I feel like it was really popular like maybe a year ago. Yeah. The basic premise is they're all smut books. Which is not something I normally read, but they are so popular, I wanted to give them a chance. This book also has really fucking stupid names. I hate, I just hear, shh, every time I read the names. They're so stupid. It makes me mad. Like, and they're all spell weird. Like, the main love interest, his name is Rysand or something dumb. And the girl's name is Carlisle?
I cannot tell you because I have not read these books. I just see them on book.
I hate it. What happens is basically you have two worlds. You have like a human world and it's very, I guess, medieval adjacent, I guess. You have three sisters who something happened to the mom. I don't even remember. And they live with their dad, but their dad is like injured or just like a worthless piece of shit or something. He like doesn't do anything to provide for his family. And of course, two of the sisters are helpless. So then you have our protagonist who's like, I'm so cool and I fight everything and I provide for my family because I'm a woman. And I'm like, okay. And you have this other world where it's like fays and it was like all magical and shit. You have like four kingdoms and they're loosely based on the seasons. And there's this wall. I kind of always thought of like the wall in Game of Thrones
yeah.
is sort of what I compared it to. But there was like this wall barrier that separated them because I guess like the fays and the humans like didn't get along. I think there was a war or something. I don't remember. But something happened and like one of the fays was getting punished for something. So we got turned into like a boar and our main character, Feyre, I think, ended up killing that boar. So as punishment for killing one of them, she basically got like kidnapped and taken to the Spring Kingdom. And the guy who like runs the Spring Kingdom was basically in love with her and she was in love with him, but the whole book was basically about like they were just having this like super hot sex was not written well, and it was just like 10 pages. It was so smutty. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even arousing. I was just like, okay. Mm-hmm. That's nice. Is how I was responding to it.
This is fine.
And basically it sets it up as like the guy from, I guess there's also like a Night Kingdom and there's also like a Day Kingdom. So I guess it's like the seasons and times of day, which is stupid. Pick one. Consistency. So like the guy, the prince of the Night Kingdom, his name is Rhysand, and he's like, he's this bad boy and he's trying to kidnap her. But like they have this thing like where it's almost like imprinting in Twilight where if they see someone, they like know that they're gonna be mates for life, and like Rhysand is like the mate for life of this girl, so like he kidnaps her, and basically through like a bunch of trials she realizes that like he's the good guy and the guy from the Spring Kingdom is the bad guy, and it's just a lot of sex. So that's kind of like the loose story arc of like the whole series.
Is that the book where it's like this big?
Yeah, they're thick. So I think the second one is like the thick book, and I actually gave that a 4 stars because I actually really enjoyed that one because it did remind me of Game of Thrones because it was a lot more about like political scheming. At that point, I think the main character is with the Night Court guy, mm-hmm. and they're like married or like going to get married or something where they're like co-running the kingdom together, and it does get into like some political scheming stuff, and it's like not just like sex all the time, which I was just like, okay, which like nothing against sex, love sex like everyone else, but it's just like, I don't know, I'm like not big on like smut, I'm not big on fantasy, I feel like it loses me a lot, like mm-hmm. high fantasy stuff.
Yeah,
but let me read my review. So I think, again, this is the 4th book in the series. So, like, by this point, our main character does something to turn her sisters into Fae, and they live with her in the core. And the guy protagonist, Rhysand, he has 2 brothers as well. So that kind of sets it up to be, like, you know, if it's, like, a smutty book, everyone's, like, daydreaming about their in-laws, I guess, ? Mm-hmm. And they're all basically running the kingdom together, and they all have different personalities, and there's a lot of stuff about that. So one of the sisters' name is Nesta, and Cassian is the brother of Rhysand. You need to know that for this.
I'm going to be really honest with you. I'm a little lost right now already.
Should I keep going? that's the thing. There's a lot of details that I could honestly care less about. But I have to set it up so that way you know what I'm about to say.
It's okay. Just go. You're good.
So Nessa's a sister, Cassian is a brother. That's all you need to know. So here's my review. Quote, didn't finish. This book was a hot mess from the beginning. This was a barely disguised lust story between Nesta, a character who is completely two-dimensional up until this moment, and Cassian, her brother-in-law's brother. I know they aren't legally family, but that's too close for comfort. There's hardly any plot or action except when there are sex or unrealistic amounts of masturbation scenes. And the sex, oh my god. Mass literally writes multiple times that Nessa's breasts grew heavy with desire. What? That's not what happens. The sex writing is almost as absurd as 50 Shades of Grey. Although, I really think the turning point for me was when Nesta was masturbating to the idea of being Eiffel Towered between Cassian and his brother. I was a third of the way through this 30-something hour audiobook, and I realized I couldn't do it anymore. Nothing of importance happened in the book. The plot hardly moves. Definitely done with this series if she's writing more. The last 2 books were meh at best, and I couldn't even finish this audiobook.
I remember this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was just like
a hot mess.
Because the way that I was thinking about it is just like, I couldn't imagine like daydreaming about hooking up with like any of my brother-in-law's siblings. I was just like, that's like too close. Mm-hmm. And she found it so hot, like that she would be Eiffel Towered between like her brother-in-law's.
Yeah.
And, like, every other scene was, like, basically her masturbating. And, again, nothing against masturbation, but it's just, like...
Again?
I get it. Yeah. I was just, like... It's just so stupid. I hated it. I was really upset.
It's okay.
But let's hear something better from you.
I have to go back to my list. Okay. So, this one actually is a recent read that I read. And it's called Calming the Emotional Storm, Using Dialectical Behavior, therapy skills to manage your emotions and balance your life. by
Don't tell me how to live my life.
But it's by Sherry Van Dijk. Or Dijk. It's D-I-J-K.
So. I'm the wrong person to ask about pronunciation stuff.
But I'll be really honest with you. My dad sent this to me and he was like, you need this. And I was kind of angry when he said this to me because I was like, why do you think I need to control my emotions? I'm fine.
The irony in that.
Like, he sent it to me, I want to say, in the middle of the blur that I called 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, even last year.
Continuing into 2024.
But I finally, like, I'm trying to do some new things with reading, like going to the library, and then even, like, I have so many books in my own personal library that I haven't read, and so,
instead of continuously buying new ones.
Yeah, and so I picked this one up, and what I really liked about it was she was like, you can pace this book however you want. If you want to do it in one day, do it. If you want to, like, spread it out throughout days, then do that as well. Like, the whole point of this book is for you to kind of, like, balancing a little bit more, like, mindset and everything like that. So yeah. I kind of portioned out my reading with this one. I took, like, I started it on December 10th, so that was probably, like early December-ish, almost mid, and I finished it, like, right at the end of December on the 29th. I kind of spent those days, like, while, like, after reading a chapter, I would kind of just, like, think about, like, what can I do to kind of, like, treat myself better in a way.
Yeah.
Like, give myself, like, some grace. Like, I've been practicing a little bit more meditation in my life, which has been helpful. Sometimes I stretch it out when I'm, like, meditating too. Like, that helps me. I'm just, like, trying to incorporate things like
self-care.
Self-care. Like, tiny little things every day to just kind of take care of myself, even when it gets crazy. That's just, like, something I've been wanting to work on for myself and just have a I just want to feel happier and have a healthier lifestyle and, you know, just take care of myself better. So it called me out in every single chapter. There's just, like, things, like, for me, I tend to overthink a lot after I have a conversation with somebody. There are times where I feel like I'm always, like, tearing myself down. And so there were a lot of things in this book that called out myself, and I just was like, yeah, like, this is me, and I should probably make a change. So I definitely also will probably read it again sometime soon. I feel like this is a book that I can read every few months or so just to kind
of refresher
up on myself.
Yeah I like that. I like that it worked for you. My second book, or second best book for the year, is Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle
still reading right
Zevin
now.
It is an amazing book. It won Best of Fiction on Goodreads for 2022. I audiobooked it and I couldn't put it down. I thought this was a very beautiful book. The basic premise is it's like a love story, but a friendship. It's like two.
Don't tell me spoilers though.
I'm not gonna tell you any spoilers.
Okay. I'm not done.
Just to set it up, it's two people who meet because one of them is really sick. And so they meet by happenstance, and then it goes through different phases of their life where they go in and out of being in touch and working closely together. And then they work on video games. They become like video game developers together. But it's a very beautiful book because I feel like there's a lot of romance books out there, but there's not very many that do like a love story of friendship.
And that's what I'm getting the vibe so far. I'm kind of like, I'm not halfway yet. This week has just been crazy busy. And then I got caught up watching a TV show. So I haven't been reading much this week. But what I really like about it so far is that aspect where they're like friends. But you definitely feel this different connection happening as well. So that's what I'm feeling. That's what I'm seeing so far. And I could definitely tell, like what you were saying about, like, different aspects of their lives. It felt like there are moments where you kind of, like, get this little snippet of, like, a future interview when they're, like, older, just, like, pop up randomly. And at first I was like, what is happening here? And then I was like, oh, it's like a flash, like a fast forward or something. Or, like, this book is, like, their biography in some ways.
There's a lot of time jumps in it. And honestly, I'm also a big fan of books that have, like, time jumps or things out of, like, linear order. But, yeah, I just really like it because like I said, there's a lot of books on romance. Like, it's really easy to be, like, romantic with a romantic partner. But their love is not just that. There's familial love. There's love for your friends. And I love that it is represented and painted mm-hmm. in this romantic light. Because, like, the love that you feel for really good friends is, like, is also can also be, like, very passionate and intense. Like, the love I feel for you, Catherine, is, like, yeah. I love you a lot. And I just think it's beautiful. It's not really something I feel like is, like, approached or, like, as quote-unquote accepted in, like, our society, so. And I also like how that it goes through the elements of, basically, I think the ebbs and flows of their friendship, because that's also very realistic, especially as, I know, like, me, personally, I'm a very out-of-sight, out-of-mind person, so, like, we've been talking about this a lot, where, like, if I don't see you every day, you're still, like, one of my BFFs, but, like, I just might not communicate yeah. with you as frequently, so. It very much explores that dynamic as well.
Yeah. We're on worst book now.
Second worst of the year.
So this one, I'm calling it worst because it was kind of meh, but also there were like things in it that I really hated and made me cringe. And it's Never Never mm-hmm. by Colleen Hoover.
Okay.
So I, again, what I've been doing is like along with reading read books one? In my... I think you have, because it did say that you read it on Goodreads.
Okay.
But along with, like, trying to read things in my personal library that I haven't really read, I'm trying to do this new thing, but I've been going to the library, and usually when I go to the library, I have, like, already a book to pick up that I've, like, placed a hold
on. Put on hold.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but when I'm there, I, like, decide to go to the actual shelves and just find a book there that... I haven't, like, researched beforehand. I'm just, like, kind of looking at on the spot and, like, checking it out on the spot. Because I used to do that a lot when I was younger. I want to go to the library more. I want to explore books differently in a new, fresh way. So this is yeah. kind of fun. And Never Never was one of those picks.
And, mm-hmm. You're not going to win every time.
You're not going to win every time. But basically the whole premise is there's this couple. Their names are Charlie and Silas. And they've been, like, together for years, but they don't have any memory of them being together or anything or anyone or about themselves and their lives.
Oh, I remember this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they have, like,
and 40... they restart every day.
Or it's, like, every 48 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
So every 48 hours, their memories, like, are wiped clean and they have to
their short-term memory is wiped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they always end up getting together trying to fit the pieces together. You're learning about, like, all the things that have happened that lead up to why they're losing their memories. And that's mm-hmm. the furthest I'll go with the plot. The story was interesting, like, the whole trying to figure out the mystery of, like, who they are and, like, why their memories were going away. But
yeah.
the things that just, like, made me cringe the most was that they were in high school and they were calling each other, like, Charlie baby. And I'm like, ew.
This seems very high school, though.
But even in high school, I would have cringed. I would have been like, ew, get away from me. We're broken up. We're done.
Didn't you know people in high school who were, like, very enamored? Like, I don't know. I feel yes, like in high school, if you were someone, if you were someone who was dating, your whole personality was your relationship.
Yes, I know, but like,
so that tracks.
I know, but I'm just, it just made me cringe inside. They're like, Charlie baby, Silas baby, and I'm like, oh, why their relationship, like, I'm looking at my review, I compare their relationship to being more intense than Edward and Bella's in Twilight. Because it was, I was like, damn, their relationship was just so heightened. And I'm like, y'all are in mm-hmm. high school. Calm down. I yeah. don't know. That was just me.
I looked this up, but I read it too. And I definitely thought that it was an interesting concept. But I feel like the ending was, like, really anticlimactic too.
Yes, it was so anticlimactic. Like, I was predicting other things of yeah. why their memories were wiped out. I wanted more of that creepy, like, tarot card reader. I thought
something supernatural. We were gonna get something
supernatural, like almost like almost maybe like some true crime murder kind of
magical
thing
realism
on.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah, we get none of that. It was very
it was very just like, oh, this is why.
Also, like the epilogue at the end, like mm-hmm. when they are grown up, and it's just so like, come on, really?
It's like their kid starts going through the same thing, and it's just like, oh yeah. No. I mean, it's a good setup for a sequel, but I don't know. I just, if it's going to be the same story but different people, that really doesn't entice me to read the sequel.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to.
It's just you're basically like copy, or sorry, you like control, find, name, delete, replace with another name.
I'm glad I tried it out.
I'm proud of you for doing something different. I also did something different. My second worst book of the year is The Power of Now, A Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment by Eckhart Tolle. I heard a lot of really good things about this book.
I feel like I've heard of this book somewhere, maybe seen it on Instagram or TikTok.
It's a really highly reviewed, I mean, it has a 4.15 on Goodreads, so it's a really highly reviewed self-help book. It was very spiritual and has a lot of philosophy. It's basically the general idea of the book is just about like being in the present instead of, you know, worrying what's going to come ahead and worrying about the past. My thing about it was it's one of those books that definitely felt like unnecessarily long, where it kind of like got to the point in like the first few chapters, and I was just like, okay, so why are there like 200 more pages? I honestly didn't finish this book. The tone of it was very patronizing. The author was very much like, and I did this because I am good at, I don't know, because like I'm enlightened. And I'm just like, come on. Like, no one cares. It's like, you don't have to, your message is nice, but like, you don't have to be like that. It could have just been like cleaner read. It was just wordy for no one's benefit. Like, I feel like there's a lot of unnecessary words. I don't consider myself a dumb person, but I found myself rereading sections because I couldn't understand the basic concept that he was trying to convey, just because there was like so much additional wordage around it that I was just like, wait, what is this saying?
Yeah, I get that. Because sometimes that happens to me, and then I have to go back and reread it sometimes to be like, did I get that right? Mm-hmm. My brain hurts.
Mm-hmm. It's very new agey. There's a lot of like religious text in it, which is fine, but it's just like, I don't know.
It didn't vibe with you. You didn't vibe with the book?
I didn't vibe with it. I wish I did, just because I've had it recommended to me so many times. But it's just like, between the patronizing tone and the fact that I literally cannot focus on what I'm reading because there's so much filler around it, it's just, it wasn't worth it to me.
Yeah. Are we on best book again? Yes.
Yeah, third best book.
So I actually had a tie for these last ones.
Cheater.
Well, like, I just had a tie, but I decided not to tie this one. The second one would have been, an honorable mention would have been The Midnight Library, but...
Love it.
A Good Girl's Guide to Murder, I think, was third place. And the reason why is because I rated that better on Goodreads, and...
Did we read that in 2020? Or 2023?
Yeah, it was like the first reading that we did that year on the pod. Oh. Yeah, I really liked that book because it kind of put me down a detective true crime hole that I'm in now. So thanks, Holly Jackson. Is that her name?
Yeah. The format for the book is really interesting, too.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. It got me, like, I think I read that book maybe, like, in 2 days. I don't remember. I just remember it was a really fast read, and I was just into it.
It's young adult, so it's an easy read.
It was an easy read. I would like to check out the sequel. I haven't yet. But, yeah, I really liked that book. I thought it was just really intriguing, and if anybody wants to know, it's about, like, it's like a murder mystery where this one girl, I forgot her name.
Andy.
No, Andy was the one, she was the one that got killed, but who was the girl that was, like, researching the whole case and everything like that?
Fitzamobi was her last name, I don't remember her first name. Pip. Peppa Pig.
But Pip is doing the senior project, basically, of trying to figure out what really happened to this girl named Andy Bell.
Yeah, it's basically a cold case where, like, her boyfriend, they basically said that he, like, due to some evidence or whatever, he was the murderer, but he died. So they're just kind of like, well, it's a closed case. And yeah. There's, like, sort of rumors that maybe he's not the one who did it, and they have to do a senior capstone project, and she's just like, for my project, I am going to solve this case.
She went the extra mile on her vision quest senior project.
this is all coming back to me. It seems like a lot, yeah, but
it was good.
She She solves it with the help of the brother of the dead boy.
Yeah, the boyfriend.
Her boyfriend.
Yeah. And apparently they made a show. I've been seeing on Holly Jackson's Instagram that they've been
filming. Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
And that should be really interesting.
I thought it was really interesting, too, because Holly Jackson did different things in this book where she put, like, there's maps and then there's, like, different parts that are like, oh, this is, like, a recorded interview I did. Oh, this is, like, an entry in my capstone log. Oh, this is a piece of paper I found. And it's just, like, and these are photos that I found. So it's just, there's a lot of
visual, like.
What am I trying to say? Yeah, visual elements, moving parts.
Yeah. It was entertaining.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't recommend listening to it on an audiobook just for that reason, because there's definitely like visual aspects to it that you're probably going to miss out on.
But again, it's a really easy read too, so.
It is. Very easy. My third best for the year is Crying in H Mart by Michelle Zahner. This was a memoir about Michelle, and it's about her being Korean, being Korean and growing up in America, Korean American, not really identifying with like Koreans or Americans, her mother having breast cancer and dying and basically trying to connect with her Korean roots, like during that's happening. She's a musician. I think she's a drummer. I really love this book. Like, I think this book made me cry, which is not really something that like memoirs make me do. Also, they talk a lot about food, like love in the form of food. And I remember David and I made a bibimbap, which is it's like a Korean dish that has, it's very spicy. I loved it. I think David's tummy couldn't handle it. But this was a really good book. I mean, it's a nonfiction memoir, so there's like not really much more I can say about it, but it's just very beautifully written.
Yeah.
I feel like I learned a lot about Korean culture, you know, being someone who is white and was raised white with white food for the most part. I remember we tried some Korean dishes and they are amazing.
I love Korean barbecue.
See, so I have a very severe shellfish allergy, so I'm really limited on like what I can go out to eat as far as like Asian food. I did find out recently that Korean barbecue, I think, is actually a safe place for me as long as I tell them, because
there's more beef.
It's more beef. They don't really use fish sauces for barbecue, so
yeah.
I think there might be like when Cassie got married in Virginia, I went up and we did a Korean barbecue place, and then there was like one sauce that we couldn't have, but otherwise it was very good. I ate so much meat. I got meat sweats. I got the meat sweats. But this is another book that I listened to on audiobook, and I liked it because she reads it, like the author reads it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I really liked it. I would definitely recommend if you're interested in memoirs or food or music or Asian culture.
I like all those things.
Yes.
And I just added my Goodreads list, but that has been on my TBR. I think when we did the whatchamacallit, A Good Girl's Guide to Murder, I think was our listener's choice, but I remember Crying in H Mart was one of the choices, like one of the final choices too. So
yeah.
And when I was reading about it, I was like, ooh, this is actually really interesting. I should really check it out.
It was another book that was like voted best of the year, I think, in 2021 or something.
All right. Okay. This one, I do have a tie.
Oh God.
Okay. I'm not going to go into super detail with them. Art of Gathering by Priya Parker.
And yeah.
A Breath of Snow and Ashes by Diana Gabaldon.
Okay.
So, really quickly, Art of Gathering. I think I did take in some positive things about it, like getting together with people, but I felt like it was just so formal about like hosting events, hosting gatherings with your friends, hosting like a meeting or
I think baby shower was like another frequently quoted example in that book.
And I'll be really honest, I don't do those things. I think the only closest thing I would be able, like I would could relate, is getting together like a studio recital, which I'm in the process of doing right now. But like other than that, like Woody and I, the last time we hosted a dinner party was like in 2014.
Oh, wow.
When we had the space, because we were using his dad's house at the time when his dad was out of town, and we used that space to host a dinner party with friends of ours. But, like, nowadays, like, we don't have, space for like a dining table, and
right,
we work all the time, and if we hang out with people, it's usually like at like outside of our house,
out somewhere. Yeah.
But yeah, I just felt like it was so formal, and I think that's what lost me about it. So but anyway,
it's funny that you say that, because that I was actually debating putting that book for my third least favorite, because I remember just reading it and I was just like, this is so unnecessarily formal.
Yeah.
Like, even, like, Dave and I love to host. We have the house for it. We have the space for it. But I feel like most of our stuff is not that formal. Like, most of the time you just, like, have people over. It's very cash. Mm-hmm. The closest thing we come to, like, a dinner party is, like, when we host Friendsgiving. And it's really just making sure everyone knows what they're bringing.
Yeah.
But, like, parties and gatherings, unless you're doing some kind of, like, business thing, I feel like stuff like that should set itself up, you know?
Yeah.
It was like how to greet people at the door, and I was just like, honestly, I just send people a text and I'm like, doors unlocked.
Doors unlocked.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I tied it with A Breath of Snow and Ashes by Diana Gabaldon. This is the sixth book of Outlander.
I can't believe you made it that long in the series.
I have book 7. I'm gonna start it sometime, but not right now. But the reason why I tied as worse, because, and I like even remember it, it took so long for me to read this book because it was just so long. Like, her books are like 1,000+ pages, and like there are pockets of like really interesting plots that happen throughout. Yeah. Like sometimes like that pop up, but they only last for maybe like a section, and then you continue.
It's back
on
to gathering herbs and being fucked.
Yeah, and hunting and the revolution. And I'm like, can we just get to the good part? There are also some things in the plot line, like, spoiler alert, because it's time travel and everything like that, between like the 1960s or like the 21st century and the 18th century. Like, Bree and Roger go back to the 20th century and they never say goodbye to, like, some of their family members that they were supposedly close with. And I'm like, what the fuck? Come
yeah,
on, you just
you're
up
like,
and coming
okay.
left. I don't know. It was so long.
I read the first 3 books of the Outlander series just because, again, it was one of those books where I was just like, these are old books. Like, they were written in, like, the 80s and 90s. But yeah. I feel like they had a resurgence probably because of the show.
Yeah.
So I was just like, okay, I feel like I should jump on this bandwagon. It's interesting premise, but the third one was really what did it for me, was just because there was like very 90s casual racism that
yes,
didn't rub me the right way. And the book was just way too long and it felt like a lot. And there were huge sections where I just feel like I could just like space out and I'd come to and I'm like, oh, they're doing the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. The third book had some language in there that I was like, ooh, this is aged poorly. Yeah, aged poorly. But yeah, as you progress through, like for me personally, I'm ready for war. Like I'm ready for the revolution. Bring it on. Come on. Mm-hmm. And it's been taking like 3 books to get there. The fourth book, the fifth book, the sixth book. I believe the 7th book, we finally get some war. I am the person that loves corruption, I guess, so. Bring on the war.
My third worst book of the year is Hopeless by Colleen Hoover.
I don't think I've heard of this one.
Trigger warning for rape of a minor. This book was gross. There were a lot of points where I wanted to put it down. Basically, it's a love story, a high school love story between this girl named Sky and this guy named Dean. And Sky lives with her, I guess her mom or her aunt. Also, spoiler alert. She lives with her mom or her aunt, and she meets this guy named Dean Holder, and he's like a bad boy. Which, I don't know, I'm almost 31, so I feel like I'm over that bad boy mentality, because I'm like, I need stability.
Yeah.
But he has, like, a really bad reputation, but he's, like, not all that he seems, and he's keeping all the secrets. And she tries to keep him at a distance, but he really likes her. So, basically, they start to get to know each other, and they fall in love. Let me read my review. I might be sensitive to this because I have close friends who went through, like, rape and sexual like child sexual abuse. So this might be just me being sensitive to what's already a hairy subject, but definitely trigger warning, rape of a minor again. This is my review. God, this book was so cringy. It really romanticized rape victims and not going through dealing with the repercussions of that. Not to mention Holder, who's the, that's the last name of the guy, was red flag central. Most of his grossness is conveniently explained and rationalized, but at the end, when he tells Skye to go on birth control so they can have a lot of sex, it was super reminiscent of 50 Shades of Grey when Christian tells Anna to go on birth control because he hates condoms. It's controlling and gross behavior. I hate that. Also, can we talk about the fact that the creepy and aggressive behavior he has is apparently okay because he's hot? Gross. I suspected Skye was raped by someone when Hoover wrote about Skye dissociating as an adult and a kid by staring at the ceiling. I figured it was her dad when she talks about fearing someone coming into her room. I wanted to throw this book across the room. I feel like this book was written by someone who wasn't raped or didn't have a close friend or family member who went through that to talk to them about what it's like. You don't have all your problems fixed by a significant other. This is very much, quote, all your problems will be solved if you find a big, strong man who loves you. We learned officially that she was raped halfway through, and it was just a montage of Skye trying to fuck her way back to normalcy and trying to confront her dad. It seems like she gets over it at the end when she realizes her boyfriend's sister and aunt suffered the same fate. That's also not how it works. It's good to find others you can talk to and even relate with, but it's not going to fix your issues. The story was worth reading the whole way through once you start it, really because Hoover is a great writer, but I really, 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 really wanted to stop a few times. I wouldn't recommend this book to anyone who liked Hoover's other books. And that's kind of all you really need to know about it. It was like gross, over-romanticized.
There we go.
Words are hard.
That's better.
A girl who is raped by her dad, and you don't find out until halfway through the book, and then she like tries to confront her dad, and it's just like, and then everything's fixed because she like people who go through trauma like suppress it and stuff, yeah. Which is fine, but like she, I guess, gets back in touch with like that side of herself, and then she like tries to confront her dad, and everything's fine because this bad boy named Dean loves her and he's trying to help her, and it's just very cringy. It was gross. I did not like it. Honestly, even looking back at my review,
like something I'd want to read?
I wouldn't recommend reading it. You could, like, I usually like Colleen Hoover as a writer,
yeah,
but
like, I enjoy
this
even
just wasn't
it. Like, oh.
Verity was great.
Messed up.
Yeah, Verity was great. And I feel like this is maybe just trying to be, like, edgy, but it's just
really sad and not something that I'm interested in reading.
No. I wouldn't. 10 out of 10 would not recommend. Yeah. That's it. I guess that's our best and worst of 2023. How many books did you read this past year?
20.
What was your goal?
It was 20. I read 20, nice. literally finished on December 31st.
Yeah. Ooh.
So, yeah.
Mine was 100, and I read 100.
Nice. That's a lot. I don't know how you do that. That's a lot of stuff.
Audiobooks, comics.
Can't do that.
My goal for this coming year is 105. So I was just like, if I can do 100, I can add 5 more to that. So we'll see.
I made a goal of 30. And if I can make it through that.
All right. Well, this was fun. And is there anything we have to say before we go?
Stay tuned for our future episode of The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue. If you haven't read it yet, check it out. Mm-hmm. That is the next mm-hmm. book that we will be covering with Rainer Slay. I'm excited mm-hmm. for this.
Yeah, there'll be a good book
and
to do for
to
sure.
I need to check my mailbox because apparently I got my copy mailed or delivered yesterday. So I need to see if it's in there.
Ooh, look at you.
I'm so excited. Well, I got it from the library originally because it was like, and it took a while for the hold to come in. And I thought about mm-hmm. Doing a hold again, but I was like, no, I really like this book. I should just buy it.
Yeah, most books aren't that much anyway, so.
I went to thrift books, so they're reasonably priced. But anyway, yeah, stay tuned for that.
Yeah, we'll see y'all on that, and I guess bye. Until next time.
Bye.